Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. From 1993, attorney and Beatles fan Manuel Klausner and Hungarian-born jazz musician Tommy Vig discuss cultural choices and music, with Vig contending that most of the music broadcast in America is junk and that we are never given the opportunity to become familiar with the great contemporary composers. We hope you enjoy today's episode, and don't forget to subscribe to the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
Well, Tommy, I'm glad we're having a chance to have our dialogue today, because over the years we've had a chance to go out to see you socially. I've had the privilege of watching you perform as a very talented jazz musician. And one of the subjects that we've talked on and off over the years is the issue of art, jazz, classical music, and what's the best way that people who really have a specialized taste and they like high quality art or music, what's the best way they can get that in a society? And I know we have some disagreements about that. What's your approach? What do you think is the best way?
Well, I experienced two systems in my life. One of them was the communist system under which I existed between 1948 and 1956 when I left Hungary. And of course, in the United States, the system is completely different. There is much less restraint, and there is no government interference with how the arts are presented. So I experienced both systems, and so I can talk about both from a personal experience.
So where do you come out after seeing both?
Well, I think a combination is probably the best, because in Hungary, under the communist regime or under any dictatorship, the government tells everybody what to do, and that's not very good. I risked my life to escape that. In the United States, the government tells none of the TV or radio stations or theaters anything, and it leads to not a great deal of variety, but rather a kind of a dictatorship of the majority as far as cultural presentations are concerned. And so arts suffer in a different way than they did in Hungary.
But you don't think that we have a wide diversity of styles of music, of theater, of art in this country?
Well, in small private presentations, yes, tremendous diversity and wonderful. But in the mass presentation, where if I go home in the evening after working and I turn on the television, I cannot watch any of the programs. They are all made for more or less stupid people, people who have no cultural education or desire to know higher quality art in any fields, not in literature, not in theater, not in music. Certainly that's my expertise. And you will not see a Dizzy Gillespie concert or Charles Ives symphony on television here ever.
With the exception particularly of the cable channels or public television, where
I don't see it on anything.
Dizzy certainly before he died was on a number of events that were televised, sometimes live concerts. But how would you approach it? What do you think would be better than the present system?
Well, there's a system I think that you will like, which I thought of.
All right.
Which is that, see, we are talking about public airwaves. We are talking about NBC, CBS. I'm talking about the networks. I'm talking about major forces of communication in this country. They should be compelled, in my opinion, not by necessarily government as such, but by some force that that society would pressure them to present a variety of stuff. Radio stations too.
Well, when you say you've thought of something that I would like, I do like the idea that there is the pressure of the consumer, the audience is the ultimate pressure, and certainly on commercial television with the networks. If the network or the producers of the program cannot find a sponsor, an advertiser, they're not going to be able to finance the program ordinarily. And that's a function, ultimately, whether an advertiser thinks there'll be a big enough audience to justify paying the cost of putting on the show. But I don't really understand whether, if we're merely talking about private pressure, I think that's the essence of liberty, and I think that's really our system, and that yields the diversity, and it avoids the problem of having some central agency or some central bureaucrat dictate the taste for the masses. Where do you come out? Where do you come out exactly?
I agree with you that the taste cannot be dictated, because in Hungary they tried it under Zoltán Kodály, the great Hungarian composer who was in charge under the communism of what kind of music to present to the people. So on the radio we had good music because Kodály approved it. But the masses, they wanted to listen to rock and roll. That's what they wanted. So they tuned out the Hungarian radio stations, and they tuned in the Spanish or English or whatever other radio stations where they could get the junk music, which they craved, insisted upon, and wanted. This is what they wanted.
All right. But I recognize that you reject the Hungarian system, the communist system that you saw, but you don't feel that the American system, which by and large has a very small role for government to play, you don't think that's adequate. So where do you draw the line?
Well, myself, I experienced in Germany a wonderful thing recently. Several of my symphonic works were commissioned by German radio stations, and I got paid, and this was not commercial music at all. Only a very small percentage of the people would be interested in them. Yet they were on the air, and I think that for a great nation like the United States, it's wrong to have only junk on the airwaves. And you mentioned that on some of these minor channels there could have been some concerts, and there were, favoring Dizzy and so forth. Believe me, they are very commercialized stuff. Because I see sometimes on these channels what they have. And the real art of today is simply in the United States not allowed to flourish to any extent as part of our nation's cultural totality.
So how would you change the system?
I would absolutely insist, this is the point, and I don't know whether the government should or who should, that we have some laws that say that when you use the public airwaves, you have to spend some time with public benefit types of programming. You can't just monopolize it only to make money. Because you and I agree on that the system of making money is the best system. I think we agree on that.
Well, I would say the system that allows people to choose, everybody operates from a profit motive. It may be not making money, but non-pecuniary. People may donate their time without getting paid. So I would just make a slight adjustment in that. I think that the best system is a system that allows people to make their own choices, because people will want to profit for themselves, whether it's for money or otherwise.
Yes. In other words, but even if we just say money as the basis of profit, as the basis of a society, I myself would prefer that to any other system at this point, because I experienced some others, and certainly when it comes to a society that's based on profit, the profit motive, it is truer to life, truer to how people think, and is a much better system to provide each other with goods and services than any other system.
So at what point would you say the profit motive as we practice it in this country in terms of providing diverse cultural or artistic activities on television or any mass media, at what point is that a system that you would say, hold it, you can't go all the way with the profit motive, we're going to intrude some other element? Where does that come in?
Yes, I would say a small percentage of the time should be set aside, specifically determining that it cannot be watched by more than, say, 5% of the people, 2% of the people, 1% of the people, and provide such programs that would actually not be for the majority, and they would be cultural programs.
So this is provided on the same network broadcasting during prime time, is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. There should be, if a person who is interested in Charles Ives, the great American composer, or wants to hear an interview with Edward Teller, the great physicist, I think they should be allowed to see that on the major networks sometime during the evening.
Tommy, this is an age where we have VCRs. Everybody that wants to see anything that's recorded whatever time of day can set their VCR and tape the program and play it back whenever they want. So why would you insist on, during prime time, during the evening, putting on a program on a network where, by your definition, a very small percentage of people are interested in it?
Well, why should we discriminate against the minority?
Well, I don't think it's a question of discrimination at all. The question is who makes the decision. My view is that the individuals should be able to watch whatever they want. The people should be able to invest in any network that they want. If you want to buy stock in NBC or General Motors, which owns it, General Electric, they should be allowed to do it. And General Electric is the owner then of the parent company of NBC, ought to be allowed to make its decisions as to what the programming is it wants to. If it turns out that there's a handful of people who would like to see more Dizzy Gillespie, and there isn't enough of that, that handful of people has a number of choices. One, I do suggest that Dizzy Gillespie can be found on, not normally on the networks, but on other, cable network stations, or you see on KCT here in Los Angeles is broadcast Dizzy Gillespie. And so it's available. The other thing is people can go out to the video store and buy a video of Dizzy Gillespie, and they can bring it and watch it and put it on their television whatever time they want to watch it. And you know, I'm not mentioning, of course, the opportunity, which exists very readily, for people to go out and buy a CD. There's a tremendous library of CDs with Dizzy on it, and you can play that anytime you like. So I don't think that people need to go wanting if they want to enjoy Dizzy or Miles Davis, whoever, whichever performer or composer you want to see.
Well, let me turn this around. First of all, Dizzy Gillespie, who is one of my favorites, he recently passed away. His music was flourishing in the 1940s, late 1940s. So we are talking about a music that's a half a century old that finally got on public television.
Well, I think Dizzy advanced. I think Dizzy's music of the 40s was really not quite the same. There was the evolution. I think he had different styles and became more contemporary in the 50s and 60s and 70s and beyond.
No, he didn't.
You don't think so?
No. Dizzy played Dizzy. He invented bebop and he stayed with that all these years. His style didn't evolve.
Okay.
And it's one of the greatest styles that ever was in music, in my opinion, but he stayed with it faithfully, and why not? It was great.
How about his sideman? I mean, did you not see an evolution when Dizzy came to perform with his group? You think that you would not be able to identify the year, the decade of his music when you heard it?
Oh, Dizzy stayed exactly the same.
Okay, he played, that's an interesting comment.
Oh, yeah. He very wonderfully stayed with his own, what he had to say. And let me turn the question around. What's right with, in Germany or in Hungary or in another country, the government coming in and presenting culturally high-quality stuff part of the time on radio? Why should always the masses of people determine what's on television?
All right. Well, you mentioned both radio and television. I'll tell you, first of all, I would say what's wrong with that is it's absolutely unnecessary. If you talk about radio in Los Angeles, we have two very good jazz formats, two very good FM stations that play jazz continuously. And there's more than an abundance. I mean, that, you know, you can't listen to two stations at one time, and I'm leaving aside now CDs. But what's also wrong with the government getting involved is that the government ends up making a decision that displaces the choices of other people. And if you go back to your premise, your whole concern is, you said in Hungary, the government tried to put on high-quality things, but the masses, the audience, didn't want to listen to it. And they listened to the pirate radio and the radio stations from other countries, the music, the popular music that they wanted to hear. So you can't force people to listen. I don't assume you're saying that people must listen.
No.
All right. So now, if it's on and people don't listen to it, what have you achieved?
Oh, part of the population will listen to it. And also, there's an interesting thing that I want you to consider. Just because somebody doesn't go to the opera, part of a culture for him is that we have an opera and it's good. There's something good about it. It's a high quality human expression. I'm glad I don't read Shakespeare, but I'm glad it's there and I know it's good. It's part of my life. I wouldn't like it to be not to exist. And so, by the way, you are wrong on the two jazz stations in town. First of all, they play very limited kind of jazz music, and they will be the first one to admit it, because I know these people personally.
I know the people.
So it's very, very limited. Now, when you talk about CDs, I go into the record store, and I'm going to try to find something current, important, and these are my descriptions. I'm a musician, mm-hmm. like you're an attorney. You would know, you represent a person. The reason he doesn't represent himself is because you know about these things more than he does. With the all-encompassing education, you went to law school, you got a license, you're a professional. You know this. I am the same way in music. I know a lot about it, I understand it, I know the people who do it, I write it, I read it, I made a living out of it, I'm an expert at it.
And a real talent, I would say, as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So when I go to KLON to be interviewed and talk to these guys, I know exactly what's going on. It's very limited in what they present. They have their own points of view. In Los Angeles, I would say there are 200 radio stations. Out of these 200, almost every one of them, almost without exception, play the same junk music. I look at it truthfully. I'm not saying whether it's what kind of a system or right or wrong. These are the facts. It's true. Now, I think that the system that Milton Friedman advocates and that you advocate and that I advocate to let the people do whatever they want, at a certain point it could be wrong. Because if you watch the Grammys and if you watch the winners, the guy, the people, that group, Pepper, Hot Pepper or something like that, I mean, what has this got to do with music? This is the worst kind of circus. And yet, it's not only that the American people have to listen to this junk all the time on the air. They get rewarded. They get serious awards by the recording industry. These people sit there, dressed up, and it's almost like a cultural event, and it's absolute nothing.
Well, Tom, you mentioned earlier that it's good for society to have an opera, even if you don't go to see the opera.
Exactly.
And I don't dispute that. I think there are a lot of benefits from living in a civilized culture where you have different kinds of activities, whether we ourselves go to them regularly or not. But the real question is, if you want to have these, how do you support them? And I think that if people in a community don't choose to pay enough money to support an opera, which happens in many communities in this country, I think it's a mistake to say these people shouldn't be entitled to make their own decision as to how they spend their money, the masses of people, and the government should come in now and extract money from the masses who have no interest in the opera and make them pay to support an opera company.
But
where do you come out on that?
They do have an interest in it because they, for instance, delegate a lot of responsibility to other people to make laws, to represent them in court, such as yourself. They don't want to make the decision on everything. And in the arts, in this country, they do. Now, if you ask them personally and say, do you think you should be the decider of what music is on the air or what kind of game shows are on television, or should there be people who are going to look out for your interest and everybody else's interest with some kind of education as well as what you yourself want? I think if the person is intelligent, he would say, well, we have congressmen, we have a president who makes a decision, we have an army, we have lawyers, they are experts in their own fields.
Tommy, you're saying the experts should decide how people spend their money?
They do in this country.
But I don't think that we want to encourage more of that. I think the opposite. You quoted Milton Friedman, and Milton is a great believer in the system of economic liberty and civil liberties.
So am I.
The system that has flourished in this country side by side from the beginning. To suggest that experts should be allowed to decide makes sense only if the individual, if the mass of people can choose those experts and agree to them making the decision. If you wanted to have somebody buy, say you want to start a collection of classical music, or you wanted to start a wine cellar, you might well ask an expert, could you help me and make some recommendations or maybe assemble a collection for me that I'll pay for? I think that's wonderful to look to people who have more expertise as you're getting involved in an area. But it's always nice to be able to say, no, I don't like your recommendations and I don't want to pay for them. Where do you come out of that?
Well, why do we have congressmen and senators to make laws for us?
Well, the congressmen and senators exist to do certain things that we traditionally think of as being essential for government to do, such as maintain peace and run an army and a judicial system. doesn't do necessarily a great job with all of those, and we certainly spend a lot of money with that. But government getting involved in the arts is not a traditional function of government in this country, and certainly not on the federal level. And our experience, I think, with government programs in most areas would not, I don't think, encourage most people to feel that we want more government decision-making, more government involvement and intervention with people's lives, and more government taxes to spend money on what the people who are elected to office want to spend it on.
Well, you know, theoretically, I happen to agree with you, but I'm trying to have you focus on what happens under this system. And what happens is that we have a cultural wasteland that is so expansive that it's frightening. When you are seeing what are the records that are getting awards in this country from a musical point of view, and what's on television every night as far as programs is concerned, it's frightening that our society is going in a direction where you deny a quality, high quality cultural stuff even to exist. I mean, when have you last seen a Charles Ives concert, who's the greatest American composer, or a Thelonious Monk concert on television presented the proper way? This is part of our culture. This is part of America. This is very important stuff.
Tommy, I think that if we focus on television, I think we should recognize television is something unusual, especially the networks, which we started our discussion about. The networks are involved in broadcasting. They're making a transmission, a program for a broad audience. It's broadcasting. And by definition, a broad audience is going to be pitched at a much lower level than a narrower audience. The audience for Shakespeare is going to be much narrower than the audience for the popular music of the day. And it's just, I think you've already given the best answer that could be given to the recommendation that you're making at the outset of the program, when you said in Hungary, where the government put on the kind of stuff you think should be put on, nobody listened to it.
Well, not nobody listened to it, and of course it was a very slanted program, and I didn't like the fact that a few people should decide what's going to be on the air.
Well, who should make those decisions, Tommy?
Certainly not the majority of the people.
Well, but you don't want the majority to make the decisions, and now you're saying you don't want a few people to make the decisions.
Exactly.
Who should make it?
Now we came to the point of our discussion.
All right.
Which is that I have no idea. But that doesn't mean that what's going on is good.
Well, I think you and I will probably both agree that it's very difficult to ever find a situation where either of us would be totally satisfied with everything that exists.
Right. But that's a very broad statement, and yes, it's true.
Yeah, but now the question is, what's the best way to get what you want?
The best way is a combination. Checks and balances in this country, in the United States, work so wonderfully. Everybody has their own interest. For instance, we have the Supreme Court, we have Congress, we have the President. They are checking on each other. Sometimes they investigate, the Justice Department will investigate the head of the FBI and so forth and so on. So the varying and competing interests lead to a betterment of society. I want choice. The majority rule does not give choice. 200 radio stations, all of them play junk. It's wrong.
A harsh statement, Tommy. Majority rule is used in a governmental sense where the majority makes a decision and the minority has to go along with it. I think that's different than the market and different than radio stations, where you can have a majority that listens to a particular type of music or a particular kind of programming, but you still can find other stations that cater to the minority. It's like you can find, you whether you like them sufficiently well or not, there are two jazz radio programs in Los Angeles on FM. And so it isn't that the majority, which doesn't like jazz enough to make them the dominant program, says there won't be any. You get some.
Well, I have a different opinion. And since I happen to be in the know about music, and this is all I can really talk about for sure, I just think that the other part of society is similarly biased in favor of a majority rule. You say, what you are saying is theoretically true. There should be choice. There should be jazz stations.
I think here. We agree on theory. That's the good news. Now we got to apply it and see where we disagree.
What would it mean to you if somebody whom you trust more than I, whom you trust implicitly, would tell you that no, there is no diversity on radio stations here in town, the jazz
stations. I wouldn't believe it. Because I can listen for myself. I don't need somebody to who I trust to tell me that there's no diversity. There is. There's KPFK, there's KCRW, there's a multitude of stations, and you know, I'm not saying I listen to radio all the time, but I do know when I do listen to the radio that there are different kinds of programming. I can listen to Rush Limbaugh if I want. I can listen to, and of course we know in Washington, D.C., until just this week, Rush Limbaugh has not been able to be found in Washington, D.C. on television, but because there's enough interest in that, even though it's a very political town, and a lot of people in Washington don't like Rush Limbaugh's politics and what he says about people who are in the Democratic administration now, they've found somebody that has the courage to put Rush Limbaugh on television in Washington, D.C.
Well, all I can tell you is that the specific, I can mention to you specific artists like Anton Webern, or Berg, or Schoenberg, or Bartok, or Thelonious Monk, or John Coltrane, who are the greatest representatives of music. And you are not going to hear them on any radio station in town ever. And we are talking about a community here of about 20 million people and 200 radio stations. And I must disagree with you, because your assessment of what is jazz and what is diversity in music is it doesn't hold a lot of weight, because you don't know too much about this. You are an audience. You know about law. You know
about Coltrane. You can hear Coltrane on the radio.
I haven't.
I think
heard
less
Coltrane
now than we did, say, 10, 15 years ago. But you can go into Tower Records on Sunset Boulevard, and you'll find, you know, 15, 20, 25 Coltrane CDs there if you want to buy them.
Let me ask you, who came after Coltrane?
Well, if we ask who came after Coltrane, who's a tremendously influential musician, I'd say there are people who were with him and past. I'd say, if we talk about tenor saxophone, mm-hmm. I would say some people that were more or less contemporaries or later, such as Stan Getz, Jerry Mulligan, baritone sax, not tenor, but he played a little tenor, Paul Desmond, alto, I'd say Sonny Rollins, I'd say Dexter Gordon. You know, some of these people were playing at the time that Coltrane was playing. I think these are all exceptionally talented musicians. Stan Getz, one of my favorite musicians of all time.
Okay, but all of them that you mentioned came before Coltrane. I asked you what came after Coltrane.
Well, when you say before,
and it's not because I'm trying to give you a test, but
yeah,
it's because...
Before Coltrane started performing, or before?
I'm talking about style.
Okay, I wasn't sure what you meant.
All right. It's who came after Coltrane. You don't know about them. The top person that came after Coltrane was Albert Ayers.
Mm-hmm, I don't know him.
Albert Ayers, and then, of course, Ornette Coleman. And
I know
others.
Ornette Coleman.
Yeah, you heard of him. Who developed
I think of him for the oboe and the his other seven instruments other than the saxophone. No, I know he played a saxophone,
so
too.
It so happens, Manny, that even though you are only a lawyer, you also know about jazz, and you like jazz. Nevertheless, your taste goes way back. And of course, you are not an expert in classical music. So when I'm telling you that there is no serious music on the air, we are talking about Coltrane too. That's almost a half a century ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned that because even he is very seldom heard. But who came after him got no audience, mm-hmm. and no exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And
but I think it's partly a question of style. I've gone to a number of jazz clubs, and I've gone to jazz concerts, and I hear some of the Lute Bakken and some of the other saxophonists of the day. I find my taste, my favorite musicians, I judge it by the CDs I buy, in terms of saxophone. I like Coltrane, but my favorite really is Stan Getz, Mulligan,
mm-hmm.
Paul Desmond. I love them. Now,
yes.
Webster is great, Ben Webster,
and Lute Bakken too. You're talking about the half a century ago style.
Yeah.
Lute Bakken.
See, I date myself.
It's, it's 50 years ago, but Lou plays, you know, very good musician, a nice person, but he's not relevant today.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not sure where we end up on this. I think, as far as I'm concerned, the being in an age where we can get high-quality sound in our living room or in our bedrooms with the CD players is really the ultimate answer to your concern, because the cost of making CDs is such that you have specialized labels that can make small volume CDs or records. You know, if the energy tax that Bill Clinton proposes doesn't wipe out totally the phonograph record, or tapes, just the regular cassette tapes, and we have the new technology getting better quality there. And so I think whatever we want, every name that you've mentioned, is it not possible to go out and buy one of their tapes or CDs?
It's not possible.
It's not possible.
That's right.
You can't buy any of them?
No. When you go to these record stores, they only carry the popular music of the day, the junk, and maybe they carry Mozart, and maybe they carry some old classical music, or maybe some of the old, you know, traditional jazz players that you mentioned. But today's music and serious music is very hard to get. They would say, oh, Mr. Big, we would have to order it. Very complicated stuff.
So you're saying it's available, but you have to order it. Is that a big problem?
Many times it's not even available.
Well, it seems to me if you go in, if there's something you have in mind, or a composer, or a performer that you have in mind, and the store doesn't have the particular work that you want, you can search to see if it's available. And I'm curious, if there's nothing that's been recorded by them that would be at all available, that means the market for them must be exceedingly tiny.
That is correct.
And I wonder then, who is it that you would trust to say these people with such a tiny audience, they can't even get a current record in the in the inventory, who would you trust to make sure that those people with this tiny following are going to get the time you want on network television in the evening?
Well, you know, we are talking about extremes, but what's right, what happened in Germany, that a serious piece of music that was written today by an artist today is presented to the people, that they get a chance to hear at least part of it. Maybe they'll turn it off after 8 bars, but maybe they listen to it and they say, wow, this is different from these rock groups and this junk that I hear all day long. Maybe to give them a chance to know about some higher quality stuff. What's wrong with it?
But who makes that decision?
Well, who makes the decision that there should be only junk on the air?
Well, I think right now stations are very responsive to their listeners, to the point where stations will change their format. As you know, one of the jazz radio stations, I guess it's KGO, changed to an all-classical format because they had the opportunity to do that when one of the classical stations discontinued, and they thought they'd make more money that way. They're definitely interested in audience reaction.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This is the point. But the audience reaction is a rule by the majority. The radio stations will diligently follow the taste of the masses.
I agree. Tommy, we both agree on that. But look, today there are a number of programs, stations on the radio in Los Angeles that are playing oldies, you know, the golden oldies, the oldies but goodies. And much more today than 10 years ago. And why is that? Maybe people like that sound better, they identify with earlier periods, they don't like the current music as much. Whatever the reason is, I love the Motown sound, I love the Beatles, I love we have exciting music from the 60s and 70s that I love.
You are only concerned with popular music, man.
Now I'm talking popular music. Though I would say the Beatles, by the way, are great musicians. I would say the Beatles were both popular and great artists.
Well, I would never want you to be able to decide what's on television and what's on radio.
You don't like the Beatles? Sure. Tommy, this is the worst disagreement we've had. I would never have consented to be on this program with you if I knew that. You don't like the Beatles? Tommy, this is going too far. So you would say the Beatles never should be on.
I love it. Yes, I say that. The Beatles should never be on because it's like feeding white sugar to the people with nothing else. You have to have a variety.
Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, one of the great advances in contemporary music, popular but complex musically, more than me, and you wouldn't even give them a showing on a network during prime time. Is that what you're saying?
It was junk. The Beatles had nothing but junk. They were kidding themselves and everybody else, and that was the attractive part.
My goodness.
People said,
my goodness.
People were attracted to it, like to Elvis Presley, because they felt that junk can succeed. It's exhilarating.
I think there's a point that's being made here. I don't think we agree on it, but I think that point is being made that people have very intense feelings about music and have come from totally different directions. And the difference, I think, between you and me is I will defer to people in the private sector to make the decisions as to what should be aired. And I would really not particularly trust having you in charge. Much as I enjoy hearing you perform, I don't want somebody in charge of programming content who's going to make decisions that I have no opportunity to modify.
Well, but what we have today is that people like you make the decision what the majority should listen to. Because you like it, then you say that it should be on the air.
Well, I mean, to a point. I mean, I'm just one of the mass audience. To me, the most control I have is what I listen to with my CDs at home. The second most control is if I want to use my VCR. When there's something on the air, tomorrow night on television in Los Angeles, KCET, there's going to be an event that is a televised event that actually I was present at 2 weeks ago, Merci Julia. It was an event to honor Julia Child for her great contributions to the celebration and understanding of French cooking in the United States. And now we're going to have a program, be an hour, hour and a half program on television Thursday night. Not everyone's interested in food. Not everyone's interested in the great chefs. There were numerous chefs that came over from France to participate in the event. Michelle Richard, the creative and masterful chef at Citrus, organized the whole affair. Paul Bocuse was here, Roger Verger, and Alain Ducasse. And we had some great, great, it was a wonderful celebration. Now, this is probably not an event for the masses. I do know in advance that if I'm not able to watch that program, I can tape it, and I'll be able to watch it at my leisure. And I'm thankful that we have a system that lets me make those choices. And I wouldn't want to really have it any other way.
Wouldn't you want to have some music by Webern and Schoenberg and Bartok that you could also do this with besides Julia Child's cooking show?
Tommy, I'm aware that their music is available when I go to Tower Record, when I look at their classical selections. They are all available.
Mostly not.
Tommy, you and I, after this program, we're going to go to Tower Record, and I'll show you how you can get these.
All right. But, let me ask you this. How would you accomplish choice, serious choice? We are talking about cultural choices now. And even though you wouldn't want me to decide for you, and I wouldn't want to decide for you either.
Although I do trust you when we go to Hungarian restaurants to order for me.
There. Now, like a good lawyer, you jolted me to the point where I lost my train of thought.
Skillful. Listen, while you're searching for that, let me make a point. You know,
You make a point. That sounds fair to me.
But Tommy, I want to ask you this. Today happens to be the day we're having our interview on March 3rd, and this happens to be the anniversary of the day that the Congress, a group that you favor having more power in the arts, made official, they passed an act that made it official that the national anthem of this country was the Star Spangled Banner. What's your view of that?
I don't know, but you are putting words in my mouth. I didn't say that the Congress should decide anything about the arts. I myself don't have a very exact vision. I think the only thing that we could do is to absolutely make it contingent upon somebody having a license to a radio station which broadcasts music, that part of the time they must broadcast variety of music, mm-hmm. not only that the majority likes, but that too which only the minority likes. As a rule, if they don't do that, they shouldn't be allowed to have a license. Why? Listen to it. Because it behooves a great society to have also cultural stuff, highly cultural stuff on the air. Even if the guy never listens to it, the cab driver on the street, he will want to know that he lives in a country that values culturally important stuff. Now, how this should be accomplished, I really don't know for mm-hmm. sure. It shouldn't be given to one person or 10 people to decide. But I think that it should be a decision that's not made only by most of the people, because it's not best for most of the people.
Well, I think where I come down on this, Tommy, is if we really want the full panoply of quality, we need to rely on the potential of people to do the best things in their lives, to come up with creativity, let the arts flourish by letting people alone. I think the more conditions you attach to licenses, the more requirements you impose on licensures, typically a government activity, so whether it's the federal Congress or some other level, you're basically saying government needs to impose some kind of constraint on people who are using the airwaves. I think the airwaves should be privately owned. I don't think, you know, this notion of public control of the airwaves, I think, is a euphemism and really is not technically nor philosophically desirable. But I think the idea that if we're going to achieve the highest level of creativity in the arts, we need an enlightened populace. And you can go to any country in the world, if they don't know how to read and write and don't know how to use musical instruments, I don't care what kind of conditions the government makes on licenses for radio, you're not going to have the quality you want because it won't be there. So you need to have an educated populace that takes art and culture seriously and will, through people's activities in their daily lives, be able to elevate the standards of what they're able to do with music or art or anything else. That is civilization. That's not from the government. That's from the people. And the government can do, the best thing the government can do, in my judgment, to assist quality in these matters is for government to get out of the way. Government should reduce taxes on artists. Government should not have these, should not tax people who want to pay to go to concerts or do entertainment events. And we can make it easier, more accessible. Right now, the government, I think, gets involved in very bad ways, and I think it's a setback. Now, I would like to say, I think that this may be the beginning of kind of another subject for us, so maybe I suggest that we defer this, because I want to take you out to Tower Records, and I want to show you, I want to go to that classical music counter, and I think that we come back again, and we pursue the remaining subjects that we have yet to tackle here.
I think that's a wonderful idea.
Okay, this has been a lot of fun, Tommy. I enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you, Manny.
Thank you.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Mm-hmm.